welcome to another episode of Inside the World of Duotone with me, your host, Toby Bromwich. Today's guest needs no introduction. Winning her first world title at just 10 years old and then going on to win 10 more world titles before switching disciplines, competing and qualifying for the Olympic Games, and now joining the Duotone family, Gisella Pulido's journey is one of constant evolution. We catch up with her today to see what it was like to be 10 years at the top of freestyle before transitioning into Olympics, switching up disciplines and stepping outside of her comfort zone. So let's get into it. Welcome, Gisella. Excited to have you on the show.
Where are you today and how are you doing?
I'm in Tarifa in Spain and I'm doing okay. Could be better because a couple of days ago I had a crash while I was on the water and I had to get some stitches, which is... it's okay. It's not too bad. It could have been worse, but I have to be out of the water for a couple of days. So, you know, would be better if I can get on the water. I think there's some good winds coming on the weekend. So I'm going to be sitting in the beach.
Okay. You're going to be cheerleading all the guys. So that was
exactly.
To talk us through that. You recently joined Duotone. When did you join the team? And you previously you've been... chasing the Olympics, and it looks like you're making a little bit of a switch. So just tell us a little bit about that.
I really can't remember when I joined Duotone. It was like a very natural transition for me. I went to the World Championship last year in October, the foiling. And after this, I went on a holiday to Brazil. And I was... I was just really excited to go back on the twin tip, you know, like to go back on freestyle a bit and just free riding and enjoying it a bit, because I think I lost a bit of my motivation with kitesurfing while I was foiling a bit. And then, like, I think it's been over a year already. We just didn't make it, like, public yet, because I asked, you know, like, Duotone to keep it a bit more quiet because I was still doing the Olympics and I wanted to transition a bit into, like, what I'm doing now. But I'm really stoked to be part of the team. So I think it's been over a year or something. It's just very slowly building my relationship with Duotone. And I like it this way because, you know, like, transitioning from falling to back into my roots, I guess, my like, back into twin tip, freestyle, free riding and stuff. So... you know, I like it that way, more chilled.
Nice. There's maybe a little bit less pressure coming into it. It's great
exactly.
to see you. Great to see you coming back to your roots. And I mean, let's just, for people that may have never heard of you, which is probably not many people, but talk us through your, am I right in saying you're 10 times freestyle world champion? Or is it more? Or tell us some of your accolades.
Yeah, 10 times. Some people say... more, especially in the media in Spain, I guess just because the number, but for me, like, I count the 10 titles, freestyle 10 times world champion. that's me. I started kiting when I was really, really young. When I was 6 years old, I started flying kites. And then immediately after I went on the water, at 10 years old, I started doing some competitions, managed to become world champion at that age. And then, like, everything came supernatural. I was just really excited to compete, to do the sport. I don't know. I just, I've been always very competitive, I guess. And, you know, like, when you're young, you don't really realize, but I think since I was a kid, I was really pushing and I had something inside of me, I guess, that was, you know, like, I was bringing the, I don't know. I had this motivation inside of me, I guess, for the competition. And I'm already 32 now. It's been like a long, long journey.
you're a veteran at 32. That's incredible. So let's go back to the beginning. Yeah, let's go back to the beginning. You started at 6. You weren't originally from Tarifa, right? You moved there. And, like, how did your journey begin? Tell us how you started, where you saw it, and how it became a passion. And when did you, as long as I've known you, you've lived in Tarifa. So when did that transition to move there come?
I was born in Barcelona, and I started doing every single sport my dad taught me because he was very active as well. Like, he was doing snowboarding, skiing, windsurfing, skating, like every single sport or water sports or sports with boards, anything that my dad was doing. So I was I always had a really close relationship with my father, and he was like teaching me everything he knew. So that's kind of how it all started. And then, like, when kite surfing arrived in Spain, my dad got a kite and a board, but he said he was too dangerous for me to start, because I was very young and very, like, very light at the same time. And you know, when you want something as a kid that your parents don't allow it, the more you want it, kind of. So this is a little bit how it started. So I was building my own kites, actually, when I was 6 years old. But obviously,
Wow.
like, those kites weren't flying, so it was a little bit of a disaster. And then my dad bought me the first foil kite, trainer kite, kind of, just to practice a little bit on the sand, play around while my dad was in the water. And then it just everything came supernatural. I started kiting, as well as many other sports. At the same time, I was doing some swimming competitions, so I was since very young in the competition as well. So everything came supernatural, and I just started doing some championships, European championships, world championships, until at the end of my life, it was kiteboarding. And as well, I moved to Tarifa because of the wind, basically. Yep.
Well, that's great. And looking back at it now, I mean, you're still got many years ahead of yourself. But how do you look at that now? You know, the accomplishments you made at such a young age, not just within the competition, but I think you have been a pioneer as far as a professional athlete in the way that you've gone about everything you've approached, even through your sponsorships. You've had probably the biggest rider that's managed to achieve outside industry attention. So tell us about that. I mean, you must be extremely proud of your legacy.
Yeah, like, if you say it, for sure, it's not something I think about every day. But of course, I'm stoked of who I become, and of course, like, the legacy, or however you want to call it. But that's a lot of work from my dad, because he was always thinking that the industry is not that big, you know. So he was always looking for sponsors outside of the sport and trying to find bigger brands outside. So I think this was like his job. But I guess I was also lucky, because I became world champion when I was very, very young. So I guess for the media, it was very, very nice to talk to or about it, you know, because I was like, I won the first world championship when I was 10 years old, got the Guinness World Record as the youngest world champion. So I think, because I won at such a young age, that helped me as well to build that image outside of the sport, especially in Spain, as an athlete. So of course, I'm really proud, and at the same time, it's a lot of responsibility, because, you know, like, in Spain, people know me, and, like, sometimes, you know, like, it's a bit like, okay. But at the same time, I just feel pretty relaxed about it. I'm stoked, for sure, and I'm proud, and of course, I want to build more from there. And actually, like, now building a bit more my image in the sport, because not that many people know me in the sport, actually. I think I feel like people know me more outside, but not so much in the sport. And it's nice to go back to this world, I guess.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit then. So you did. Let's talk about the early years of your, you know, first world championships. How was it dealing with everything at that young age? You had a lot of pressures, and I mean, back in the day, there was you weren't allowed to compete in some of the tours. So how is that? I mean, as such a young person as well, that's a lot to deal with. So yeah, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. I don't remember everything in, like, very, like, with detail, because it's been a long time. But yeah, I remember we had two world tours, two circuits, and, like, I was only allowed to compete in one. And then, like, I got an invitational, or, like, wild card to another event from the, well, there were, like, two tours, as I said. It was PKRA and KPWT, so I was only allowed to ride in the KPWT. But then I got an invitational wild card to the PKW, PKW, PKRA. And then, like, so I started doing both tours. But at that age, like, I didn't feel so much pressure. Like, I feel like I was really enjoying it, you know. I love to compete. I love to kite. Of course, I wanted to compete in, like, both tours, and, you know, like, because some people were saying that I didn't have the level to be on the other tour, and then when I came to the other one, I won as well. So it was like also nice for me to show that I had the skills and I had the level, and then I was able to compete in both tours. And yeah, as I said, like I wasn't feeling much pressure. Like the most pressure I had was myself, like that I put on myself, because of course, like I was very competitive. I wanted to be the best. I was pushing, the limits of the sport, trying to be like the best in the water, and of course, like the results also, like they were really important, because sometimes you were really good, you ride really good, like free ride or like when you're training, but then once you compete, you feel the pressure, you stress, you don't learn your tricks. So it was really important for me as well to show that my level was high in the competition. So I just, yeah, as I said, it felt supernatural, because like I just have something in me that I really like to compete and I love to compete in. And for me, it was just a little bit of a game when I was a kid. And then, of course, it started to be more a little bit like a job. And then I started to get sponsors and then a little bit more pressure because I wanted to be the best. And at the same time, people were like thinking, oh, Gisela is going to win again or not. And of course, then Karolina Wienkowska came, Bruna Gagea, which were like the big names, with like, what the tour was like, starting to get more competitive. So I don't know. I have good memories from those 10 years, 10 titles. And yeah, it's really nice. Really, really stoked of who I become. And of course, as you said, the legacy.
Yeah. So let's go then a little bit into the transition into the Olympics. I remember on the tour that you always said you wanted to be an Olympic champion was one of your goals. Talk to us a little bit about that. How did the transition come about into foiling? Did you just want to step away from the freestyle scene and yeah, tell us about your decision to sort of chase the Olympic dream?
Yeah, like my dream was to, when I was a little kid, was to go to the games, to the Olympic Games. I guess for an athlete, this is like the biggest thing you can achieve. But of course, you need your sport to be Olympic. That's like the first thing. So when I was doing the freestyle, then like I stopped after I think 12 years. But it was a bit like a transition, because the World Tour, it was like that time where it was bought by an investor and then like kind of disappeared. So we had no World Tour for a couple of years, and then I decided to take some time off for myself as well, because I was competing for 12 years without stopping. So I felt I needed a little bit of a break. And then in those years, I was doing some other things, like I was surfing big waves. I was doing like some crossing between islands, like the Canary Islands, like some different things and projects outside of competition. And then when kitesurfing was selected for the games in Paris 2024, then I decided I wanted to give it a go, to try. And the first thing I said for myself was like, if I like the discipline, if I like what I'm doing, I'm gonna continue. So that was a little bit the key points, right? So then I started foiling, because like the Olympic discipline, it was foiling, and everything came supernatural, and then once I started, I was part of the sailing federation, because kitesurfing is like a little bit split. So you have like freestylers, or like riding twin tip and stuff, and then the foiling, and the Olympic is a little bit different. It's like we depend on the federation, and like the kite surfing as we know it is not really like part of the games. It's like a sailing class, I would say. It's a little bit hard to explain, but it's like kitesurfing is a part of the Olympic, and it's part of the sailing federation, with foiling is a little bit different. So that's how I started, basically, because I love the sport, I love the foiling, I love the racing. It was really fun, like I remember back in the days when we were doing some twin tip racing in some of the events. I was like, wow, I love to go fast on the twin tip. And then like when I was on the foil, I was like, wow, this is so cool, like I'm going so fast. But at the same time, I was like scary, because you're on the foil and that thing that you have underneath is pretty sharp. So like it took me a while to get used to it, but I loved it. And then once I started doing the Olympic campaign, I was like completely, I fell in love with it. And then through the journey, of course, I had some ups and downs. But yeah, overall it was amazing. And really stoked that I made it to the games, because it was tough. I had to qualify. So the way it works is like there's 20 spots for the Olympic Games, and it's one per country. So you need to qualify your country, and once you qualify your country, they select someone to go. I was the one selected in Spain, But for me, like the biggest thing was to qualify for my country because I was the tough one. Then once you have your spot, you're more relaxed and you can focus on the games. But the year before it was like a lot of stress. But yeah, like as I said, like everything came supernatural, and I love the discipline as well. And it was an amazing experience to go to Paris 2024.
Right. And
Really nice.
let's talk about the disciplines are almost polar opposites. One is basically like sailing, racing, and then the other
Exactly.
one, and it's basically the first across the line. There's strategy obviously involved too, which would be you can probably take from your experience in kiteboarding. But how does it feel as an athlete? You went for a decade in events where you're judged, and there's many competitions that can be close heats. How is that to deal with as a competitor? It must be kind of tough. And did you like the fact that this was a change up and it was just about the fastest?
Yeah, like it was completely different. When you're being judged at the end, some people they're scoring your tricks and they decide kind of who is the winner. Of course, you can do your best and do the best tricks, but sometimes some people or some judges will think this rider was better or the other one was better, and your thoughts are different because it's very subjective. I don't know if it's the correct word, but it's not so objective as like you're the first one crossing the finish line, you know, so you win. There's no, of course, then in the sailing you have like this other part of the game, which is like you have some rules in the water. Like of course when you're sailing, your port, starboard, up, windward, leeward, like all those things, and you can get a protest on the water, and then you can go to the jury room, and you also get judged, and maybe you can get disqualified for one race. But most of the time, if you do fair play, you follow the rules, you're good. You know that if you're first, you're first. If you're second, you're second, and that's not gonna change much. While with freestyle, it was more, you know, like okay, I've done like the best heat of my life, but you don't really know until the judges they show the score, and you're like, and the winner is, and you're like standing with four girls on the podium, and you don't even know if you're first, second. You're like stressed. This is like the adrenaline, you know. In the racing, is a bit different. You know, you're going on the water. You're stressed, of course, because before the race you get all the adrenaline, but once you finish the race, it's all done, and you know the result and everything. So, it's on that side. It's nice, you know, to not be judged and just go your full on speed and full on like send it super hard on the race, and then you're, you know, your result. So it's quite different. It's quite different, but I like it as well.
Do you have
It's very
a
cool.
preference? I mean, you talked about that you would say you have a competitive nature. Do does maybe having a result that didn't go your way, does that just add to your motivation? And do you feel that like it makes your level step up on the water? I mean, there's definitely riders that in free riding, they're maybe not spectacular. And when the competition horn goes, they just step it up another level. So like, where do you see yourself in that sort of situation?
Yeah, that's true. Some riders, the free riding, they are not amazing, and then in the competition they get that extra motivation. And sometimes the opposite. Free riding, they are amazing, and then in the competition they feel a bit stressed, and they don't perform as good. I think I'm more on the other side. I think free riding, I think I have, of course, some good tricks, but on the competition I always have that extra that I bring, just because I think I can handle the pressure quite well. And always, like if you remember, like when I was especially in the last years with Carolina, Bruna, it was very tight. It was always like few points, few, you know, few details, and I felt like under pressure I guess delivering better under pressure. So I think this is of course one of the good things I have as an athlete, that I love the pressure, and when it's tight and when you have to win by 0.1, I think I can give that extra. So I think I'm more on that side.
After a while, does that become almost too much pressure, where it's a consistent, when the battle, when you have the rivals that are really so tight, does that become like draining to you eventually, or do you feel like it just motivates you even more? Would you, because you mentioned that when you weren't allowed to compete or when you weren't allowed to fly the kite, that just made you want it even more. How do you react, do you think, to those kind of situations?
No, as I said, I like it. I like the pressure. I like when I have a challenge. I like getting out of my comfort zone. Of course, that's why I stopped freestyle and went into the racing, into the Olympic, because I mean, I was the best at something, and then I went to something new that I didn't even know that if I had a chance to actually be good at. So, like, I love, of course, like the challenges and the new things. But of course, like when I stopped freestyle and I won the 10th time the 10th title, then I felt like I needed a break because it's quite demanding, and I feel like you always need to be like at your best, at 100%, deliver like the most you can. And of course, this is really exhausting, and you need to have that motivation all the time at your peak. And of course, it takes a lot of effort. And when I won the last title, I needed a break for my mental health and for myself. And I was also like feeling like I only knew how to kite. I was like not good at any other sport because what I was doing all my life was kiting. I didn't know how to even like play tennis or something, or you know, like soccer or anything besides kiting or surfing. Everything I do now, like skydiving, paragliding, surfing, biking, running, the gym, like everything I do now, but I didn't know how to do before. So like when I was full on competing, I felt like I didn't know anything else but kiting. That's also like very tough because I was like, wow, I've only kited all my life. Of course, I'm like the best at it, but at the same time, I feel like I don't know anything else but kiting. So I also needed, you know, I was like 22 or 23, pretty young still, and I felt like I needed to discover the world for myself a bit, learn different things and different sports, and get to know new people, travel the world, not only with kiting but with different things, you know. And that's how I felt a bit when I stopped. And then, yeah, as I said, everything came supernatural. I had the opportunity to go for the Olympics and change to what the discipline is called, is formula kite. The Olympic class, and yeah, and everything came like super supernatural.
Right. And during that time when you transitioned into the Olympics, were you just fully taking a break from freestyle, or did you continue to follow and see, keep up with what everyone was doing and keeping an eye on
No,
who was coming up?
I was quite quite deep into the campaign, the Olympic campaign, and I had not a lot of time. In fact, I was struggling as well mentally because, as I said before, I was coming from freestyle, it was my discipline, what I was doing forever, which I knew I had a chance to be at the top. I was good at it, world champion, and then I went to something new that I didn't know if I could get good results, even to qualify for the games, go to the games, or you know, I had a chance to go for a medal or something. And once it was foiling and I started doing the campaign, I realized that it was not what I was expecting, especially with I think I've talked a bit about it, but in terms of like how the discipline works with the gear, with especially with the weight of the athletes, because with this new discipline, you needed to be quite heavy. So this was quite a drama during the Olympic campaign because I had to gain a lot of weight. I think I gained almost like 15 kilos, changed my training completely, new sport, new rules, new people. So I was like super like focusing on that. So I had not a lot of time to, even for myself, for my friends, for my family, I had like no time. I was like full on dedicating to the Olympic campaign, and that's why I think as well I lost a bit of my motivation because I think it was too much, and I was dedicating so much energy and time into something I knew I had no chance to get a good result because of the weight. So that was a bit frustrating, but yeah, it was tough times as well. It was good because I felt like I got to the top, which I was going to the games. The goal was like to qualify for the games. I got it, but then once I was there, I was like, wow, this doesn't make me happy, you know. It was tough. It was tough.
You probably also gain some more different perspectives that you can then bring back in. I mean, let's talk a little bit now what your thoughts are going into the future here. I've heard that you're thinking about starting to look at competitions again in sort of more in the arena that you started with. Tell us, what are your plans for this year going forward?
As I said, like I lost a bit my motivation with the sport, with the foiling. I wasn't happy. I didn't want to go on the water, and that's for me like quite crazy, you know, like if I think about myself, you know, like I wake up in the morning, I look and oh, there's gonna be wind, but I'm ready for the day, you know. That's like the most exciting thing for me is like, you know, go to the water and have fun. And then I like kind of lost my motivation a bit, and then after like how I was saying, after the World Championship last year in October, I went to Brazil for holidays, and then it's like I got my motivation back. I was riding in Cauípe in Brazil, in Cumbuco, in the lagoon, or Taíba with my friends, seeing all the freestyle friends again, just going on the water without pressure of like having to achieve something, or you know, just riding for myself. And then I was like, wow, I miss the twin tip so much, you know, because I was just foiling, and I was like, wow, it feels so good, you know. And then like I came to Tarifa, I started riding a lot with the twin tip, made a great community here this winter, and I was pushing a lot, especially with like strong winds and stuff, and a little bit, you know, like maybe on a focus more on into the big air side, because this is like something that there was I had a little bit in my mind while I was falling. I was always looking, you know, Red Bull King of the Air, like those guys going massive. So yeah, when I came back from Brazil, I had like a little bit this motivation. And I don't know, like I just want to do what makes me happy, you know, and this is for me the most important. And I think Tarifa is a really great spot for big air, not so good for freestyle. Maybe if I was living in Brazil, I would be doing more freestyle and hook tricks, you know, back to my roots. But in Tarifa, like almost every week we have like 30, 35 knots of Levant. At least we had a really good winter. So every time I was going on the water with this wind, I was just doing loops. So like I was not getting unhooked. So I was like, okay, it's just natural, you know. It came natural. So that motivates me a lot. Hopefully, like I can compete in big air a little bit and push on that side, because I think well, at least it's what makes me happy.
That's awesome. So, looking forward, have you signed up or are you looking to enter any events this coming season? Or what are your plans? Or is it more free riding? Or tell us where you're.
Yeah, I think I sent some. I applied for the Lord of Trumps, but I didn't get selected. I like it's the format that the way it works. Like you need to send some videos for the ones who don't know, and then you get judged, and I guess you're selected or not based on the videos you sent. And I think my level was not that good at that moment. Plus, I didn't send really good videos, so at least that gave me a bit more time to prepare for the next one. And I think the next comp is in June in Mykonos, so I would like to apply for that one. I think my level it's a bit better now, and I have better tricks, so I hope they can select me on that one. And if not, I keep pushing. But you know, like for me as an athlete, of course I like to do it for myself, but I'm still the same competitive as when I was 10 years old. Like I have something in me that, so like for sure, if I can push and compete, I think it's gonna be good, at least, yeah.
Cool. And then I guess now you've been kind of following a little bit more about what your competition's doing. What are your impressions of the level of female riding right now?
Oh, it's quite impressive. It's quite impressive. Some of the girls, they go massive, they go big, and for sure, like pulling some technical tricks. And I think in France, like it's not an easy spot, especially because of the conditions, like of the cold, or how cold it is. And I was quite impressed. I was quite impressed. And like, I hope one day I can be there and push the same. As I said, I have a really good place to train in Tarifa. And I think I'm quite lucky that I can train in Balneario every time there's a strong Levante. And yeah, I hope I can push. And also, like, I'm super stoked with Duoton, like, to be honest, because for me, that was like the most important thing. Since I was a little kid, I was always thinking about the gear, what was the best kite, what was a kite that was suiting my style. And when I started talking to Duoton, I was like, I want you guys, because for me you have the best kite, you know. Like for me, that wasn't the most important thing. I need to feel comfortable with the kite, with the gear, with the board, with everything, with the bar, with what I'm riding, right? So that was like the most important thing for me, to be happy with the gear. And I think with the Rebel, I can push.
Cool. So you're on the Rebel D Lab? Or tell us about your setup. What are you riding right now?
Yeah,
Would you
I
say?
ride the D-Lab with 24 meter lines. But I'm considering to try also 2022 because I recently just started and I, you know, want to get a lot of feedback. But I love the Rebel Dila because it has so much feeling and it just I just have like all the feeling that the kite gives you and the wind and like just perfect. And I ride a 133 team series bigger, which is like normally on freestyle would ride 135, 136. You go a little bit bigger because you want a bit more support for the landing and with bindings and stuff. But now with the bigger, especially because you ride so much over power, you want a smaller board so you can really like have a better pop, hold a bit more your edge. And then as well, if you're doing some tricks with your hand, if the board is lighter, it's a bit easier. Otherwise, you get some pain in your arms.
Right.
But yeah, I have a great setup.
That's awesome. And so let's talk a little bit. You mentioned that it was kind of you took some time out for yourself. You got back into it for the fun of it. But now you're also working with a trainer. Is that right? So when did it kind of switch? And tell us a little bit about your current setup, your training setup that you have right now.
You mean like with my coach?
Yes. Yeah.
Or yeah. So last year in Brazil, Nico was there. This is my coach, and we did some coaching together. Because at that time I didn't know what I was gonna do. If I was gonna compete foiling, if I was gonna keep on foiling, competing in like you know, Formula Kite, the Olympics, or transition more into freestyle or bigger or whatever. My life was going, and after this I had a call with him during Christmas, and I told him, Nico, I want to go full on. I wanna train full on for the big air. And then it's like we made a team, so I'm like part of the team now with Nico, and training with him. So I'm really stoked because I think the way to go is like to have a coach, to have a team, and feel more, you know, like surrounded by the people that support you. And especially I would love to, like, everything that I've learned in the Olympic campaign, which is having a lot of structure, I feel like I want to bring it now to this world, which is maybe when we were back in the days freestyling, it was a bit more chilled. We didn't have that structure. And I think now, like, with everything that I've learned in the campaign, having that structure, the plan, like, the season, I think it's nice that I can break that up. And, of course, I have the best of the best, so I'm really stoked that I can coach with Nico, and I think it's gonna be good.
Cool. And tell us a little bit then about that. I'm interested in the coaching with Nico. He also coaches other athletes. I believe Finn is one of his athletes. How deep does that go? Do you train as a team with those riders, or is it one on one? And does he also go into, you know, nutrition and off the water training, or is it just on water training?
For me, at least it's only on the water. We did a training this winter in the Canary Islands with another girl that she's also, well, she did a lot of tramps. She's also a duathlon rider. Her name is Aya. And now in Tarifa, Nico was here. We were training with Aya and Finn. And I think it depends a bit on our schedule, because I was not selected for a lot of tramps. So I guess like Nico was there with Aya and Finn training in Barcarès. And I think also Pippa is part of the team, but Pippa, of course, she's injured, so she couldn't join. But yeah, like this is mainly this is the team. And I think Nico is training as well Bruna in freestyle, and Finn that he's doing the freestyle as well. So I think is that these are his main athletes, I would guess. But yeah, I'm super stoked with Nico. Like, he's super professional and he's super good. And I like as well how mentally he's helping us, you know, like with pushing and like being super supportive. And I think it's nice. And I've seen, of course, in the competition with Finn, how he was doing. It was really good as well. And of course, I've seen Bruna in Brazil when she became world champion, and Finn when they both became world champion. Nico was there in Brazil with them, and it's really nice to see how he's not only a coach, but also like a bit like mental coach and like supporting like everything. And it's really cool. Like, I think he's super professional.
Okay. And so is he kind of helping with like specific tricks and giving you tips on ways to execute them? Or, I mean, it sounds like a bit of everything. Also, heat strategy, you have a lot of insight already from all your years of experience, but
yeah, like, I guess once you're in the competition, for sure, like strategy, he is going to help a lot. And then I think he's also very good, of course, like of helping to train like the new tricks, like giving you tips, filming, analyzing. Of course, we do like analyzing after the day. But I think he is really good at because, you know, because each rider has like a specific tricks that they are good at. And I think he's really good at analyzing which tricks are good for each rider. So like for me, maybe I'm really good at rotation into like front. So maybe I'm going to do more tricks doing front, you know, like that's just an example. But he's really good at telling you which tricks he thinks you could do good and be really consistent and learn fast. Of course, like the basics are the basics, but I think he's really good at seeing like each characteristic of each rider. I don't really know how to explain, but I think he's good at really just he's very sensitive and he's has a really good eye of, and he can tell exactly like okay, you're gonna get this trick super consistent, you know, like just because the way you do it feels natural for you, and he can really push you on that side, you know.
Okay,
I think that's really cool.
That's awesome. Let's go back a little bit to, you know, to talk of legacy and paving the way. I mean, you really paved the way for not only young athletes, but female athletes as well. How do you look at that now? And also just the progression of kiteboarding. I mean, a lot of it where it is today is through the groundwork that you've done, and people need to see an example to believe it. So we've had Mika, who's probably been the next young athlete that's kind of followed in your footsteps. How does it feel? Yeah, just looking at that, how the progression of the sport has gone.
It's insane. Both female and male. As I said, I was, you know, doing the foiling, and I was a little bit outside of the sport. And then when I was in Brazil this year for holidays, I was also doing the GKA event, and I see the guys and the girls riding, and I was like really impressed about the level. And now, like, you know, in the King of the Year or in Lord of Trumps, I see how they push, and it's insane, like the progression. But I think as well, the kites are much, much better than back in the days, and this helps you a lot to progress. But of course, you know, like I'm stoked that, you know, some of the girls can follow my path and follow the way I ride. And of course, I got a lot of messages from girls like, oh, I was watching your videos, how to learn this trick, how to learn that trick. And of course, you know, that makes me feel very proud, because for sure, like, besides being the best and winning, my main goal was, you know, to push the sport, push the limits, try to ride as close as the male, because of course there's a difference between male and female. There's this difference also physically, so it's impossible that our level is going to be like the men's. But for sure, like, my goal was to try to ride as close as a man, fast, big, and try to be aggressive and powerful. And, you know, like, at least that was my goal. And I'm happy, like, that I had this legacy behind me. And I see now the girls, especially Mika, she's insane how she's riding, insane. They're really, really good.
Is there someone that you're most excited to compete against, would you say, like coming into the again?
Actually, no. Like, just for me to be able to compete in something new, in a new discipline, and like that's it for me, pretty much. I'm super stoked, you know, that I found the motivation again, that I'm learning something new from the beginning. It's a complete different thing, you know. It's not the same like freestyle. It maybe for someone that doesn't know so much the sport, it could be the same. We ride twin tip and inflatable kite, but it's a completely different kite, completely different board, and like just the pop is different. Like the way we do the tricks is different. Like freestyle, we go unhooked, and with bigger, you go hooked in, and like the rotations is different. Like everything, you know, you go with bindings, and then in bigger you go with straps, you take your board off, like it's completely different thing. So just learning everything from the beginning, you know, that's really motivating me. And if I can make it to a competition, that'd be insane. Like, I've recently just started with the bigger now in January, more focused, and yeah, like that's my goal, you know, to push a bit on that side.
Right. Well, yeah, you have so much experience and knowledge, you know, from in every aspect of the sport. What would you, for aspiring athletes, what is some advice that you could give them, even from a sponsorship side or just kind of how they set their expectations and goals? What is, if you're willing to share any secrets?
I don't know, like secret.
Well, it doesn't have to be secrets.
Yeah, of course. I know what you mean. Because if it's secrets, I wouldn't be able to say it. No, but I mean,
don't want to give it all away.
No. For me, like one of the most important things that I realized through the years is that if you want to be good at something, do it because it makes you happy, because it's your passion, because you really want to push. You know, like because at the end of the day, you have to spend a lot of time on the water, a lot of time on the gym. Maybe one night your friends go out, but you have to go to sleep early because you have a trip, a comp, or you want just to rest to be 100% for the next day. And you need to sacrifice a lot. And you only sacrifice if you're really passionate about something and if really it makes you happy. And for me, this is like one of the most important things. If it makes you happy, then everything is easy because you don't have to question or think about, oh, am I doing this right or wrong? Like, you just go for it. And of course, I always took care a lot of my nutrition, my trainings, my mental health as well with a psychologist. Like for me, that was really important. So it's nice just to work on all those aspects, have a good team, like for example, with Nico as well as a coach. I think this is really important as well to have like all those things very secure and tight, because I think it's super important. And of course as well, like one of the things that I think my dad did really good is to try to find the sponsors outside of the sport, because at the end the industry, it's small. Kitesurfing is a small sport, it's a small industry, and for sure there's more budget and income outside of the sport. And I think this is also really, really important. I'm lucky to have a good manager. This is for sure something that that really matters if you want to, you know, be able to get some big brands outside of the sport. But yeah, at the end, everything comes, you know, like naturally. And like, I think if something should happen, it's going to happen. So I think if you work hard towards something, at the end, everything is just working out.
That's great. That's really cool insight. So let's talk a little bit about the sponsorship. I'm intrigued from that because I know you from Tarifa. Everybody knows you from the senior app. You have a lot of obligations with larger sponsors, and you get a lot of opportunities to maybe go to events. So tell us a little bit about how it is working with these larger brands, how it differs from just having a kite sponsor, and also maybe some of the cool things that you've enabled you to do. You've been on television a whole bunch in Spain, so. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
For sure, like in terms of media, I've been in some really cool shows or press and stuff. And for sure, this is also because you have some big brands supporting you, and that's nice. I was a Red Bull athlete for a few years, but then when I stopped freestyling, we stopped. And working with Red Bull was really nice. I was able to go to a lot of events, MotoGP, Formula One, to Austria, to the training center. Like, it was insane. I had Tag Heuer, like the watch company as well. Like, we did some really cool events with Kyle Lenny. Like, he's my idol. And I managed to go to Hawaii and spend some time with him, stay at his place. Like, you know, that was sick. I don't know, like, so many things. I have Iberdrola, which is like an electricity company in Spain, and they have, well, it's all around the world, and they have, I don't know how to say, like the windmills in the ocean. So I was able to do a project with them, and I was kiting through the windmills in England. That was also really, really, really nice. With Adidas, for example, I'm able to go to a lot of music festivals and do a lot of running events. And I don't know, I'm just really stoked of like everything that that I've been doing. And at the same time, of course, it's work, but it's really nice. Like, I really enjoy my job. It's really, really nice.
Well, it sounds incredible. And we're all really excited to see you step back into the competition arena, and we're going to be cheering for you. So
thank you.
Yeah, excited to see what you're going to do this year. And thanks so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Cheers.